If you have been to Rents.com today, I hope you have. And if you haven't, please do stop by and go to the top of the homepage. Look at the number one story up there with the pictures. And I would like you to pay attention to it. The article in second position up there is by Yoichi Shimatsu. It is one of the most elegant, historically illuminating, fully accurate articles I've ever seen. It's really an analysis of history. It's entitled Amelia Earhart's Free Spirit Soars Above a Sordid World. And it's a beautiful title. It's a great piece. You've got to read it. And then above that, you'll find the tip-off that Yoshi gave me about where the Lockheed Electra really was. It wasn't over on the right side. And if you want to see where it really was that day, go click on the top link and you'll find it. Yoshi, welcome back, and thanks for such an extraordinary article that you've written.
Well, I think, we both did what we could based on what we know. Your team and yourself did excellent on the photo analysis. And we have to give, the full credit for the History Channel to finally break the biggest open secret about World War II,
Absolutely.
And again, she wasn't murdered as a spy. I should have emphasized that a little more in the article, until after the outbreak of the war. You see, before then, she was held prisoner because the Japanese captors didn't know what to do with her, because it'd be illegal to execute her as a spy. When Japan at the time was still an ally, when she was captured, was an ally, as I point out, of both Britain and the USA. Mm-hmm. And admittedly, the alliance was pretty much tattered by the events in China and Manchuria and all that. But the Washington, naval accords, which were based on London Naval Agreement, had not really expired in any way. So, technically, Japan was still sort of beholden to report to London and Washington, and wasn't supposed to act like that, treat American citizens as some sort of heinous enemies, because there was no war at the time, and there was a nominal alliance, at least, and diplomatic contacts, gamut. So
right.
This was a terrible deed that they did, it was a real violation, of an alliance, So this was...
Yeah. So you're saying
it was a high crime, and the greater, I think, problem was the FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt,
right,
and his wife Eleanor, who was a good friend. Eleanor was a patroness of Amelia Earhart, wanted to learn flying from her. Okay, so this was a personal betrayal, along with as a political act of absolute cowardice. Yeah.
That was exactly the word that popped into my mind when you said it. It's total cowardice. And then 3.5 years later, Pearl Harbor, FDR,
right,
Handwriting all over it. No arguing about it anymore. No, I accepted it long ago. The man was just the worst. He was surrounded with communists in the government. Harry Hopkins ran much of the government. If you read Major Jordan's diaries, and I urge all of you to look that up, you can find them online. It's actually Major George Racy Jordan is his name, his testimony before Congress, in which he describes his job during World War II as security, base security at an air base, I think it was Montana or Wyoming, where American transports were being flown in every day from all over the U.S., and then they took off and went to Alaska and then into Russia. And what were they carrying? Always sealed boxes and sealed valises. They were actually sealed. Anyway, one day, George Racy Jordan, Major Jordan, took two or three armed guards with him and went into one of these American transports. I'm not sure if it was a DC-3 or a DC-4 at the time. But he went inside, and in the back of the plane, American air crews flew them, by the way, but in the back of the plane were all of these sealed valises, boxes, crates, containers, sealed shut, not to be opened. And there were two Russian Soviet guards back there on the back of the plane. And he went in the doorway, and they lowered the guns on the Russians, and they said, "Get out of the way." And they started to actually sob, "Please don't open these. Please don't open these," in their broken English. And he went over and opened them, a whole bunch of them, and looked in them. And they were full of all of our absolute top secret material about our nuclear weapons program, about our strategic defense alliance, about our strategic minerals, oil, precious metals, you name it, stocks, bonds, cash. We also flew over during those flights, which went on throughout the war, actually enriched uranium and pieces and parts and parcels of a nuclear weapons program that we gave to the Soviets. Yep. This is a fact. Major Jordan's diaries. Well, read it.
You know, there is so much. I think the majority of history is not written. Yeah.
No.
I mean, we focus on these, Marines and Army guys who were sent to their death horribly in places like Guadalcanal, the slaughter of, you know, all these farm boys from both sides. And
all unnecessary.
Never looked at seriously.
No. None of that.
You know, in some sort of through some heroic lens of propaganda.
A perverted heroic lens of propaganda.
So, you know, Earhart was definitely used as a pawn. And I think the thing is, how come there wasn't, you know, an aircraft carrier, a submarine, or even a merchant vessel in the vicinity in case, you know, she fell out of the sky, in case her plane crashed or she was shot down or something to try to rescue her.
Should have had picket ships all along.
She could have been rescued from Milley Island. There was hardly any guards there. The place where she was forced to land by these two mail carrier planes. The Japanese, the place was lightly defended. You know, all they had for ground planes that land, because their airfields were still under construction, were fighter planes. They were trainer planes, that could be used as fighters, biplanes from a different earlier era, that could, you know, mounted with a small machine, maybe a 30 caliber machine gun. And then, it didn't take much to stop her. She was unarmed. You know, she had no protection. And she could have outflown one plane, but the Japanese were smart enough to send them, of course, a pilot, you know, a main plane and a wingman, right? They would do it that way so that they could outmaneuver her. Yeah. So she, it's really tragic she was caught at all. Yeah?
She was left along with Fred Noonan, I guess, for the better part of the 3.5 years between July 2nd, 1938, and or 1937, Pearl Harbor. She was kept. Are we to think that they were kept prisoner for three and a half years, abandoned by Roosevelt?
Yeah. They weren't executed until after the war was started. The Japanese, you know, thought that if this situation blew over, U.S., Japan, and all, they would probably be able to return her to the state with a cover story. You understand? It could be worked out.
Oh, it could have been worked out immediately.
When the war came, they had to execute Noonan, and they're going to kill him. They had to kill his pilot too. So she was left there to rot by Roosevelt, Eleanor Roosevelt, the great humanitarian Eleanor Roosevelt. I think people got to wake up to, you know, big power politics, the cynicism of these politicians, which continues today. Haven't been covering Fukushima at all, but yesterday the new chairman of Tokyo Electric Power said very forcefully, he's got to dump millions of tons of water containing tritium into the Pacific Ocean. That has to be done. TEPCO has to start making money. They got to restart their nuclear plants. And he didn't come out with that because Donald Trump took the money from Shinzo Abe, took the money from Masayoshi Son of SoftBank, right? Yeah. Let them all, went to Saudi Arabia, which was arranged by SoftBank to take billions from the Saudi king in person at a grand ceremony.
Yep.
There's a price to pay. There's a price to be paid. And the price, Tokyo's saying, we're going to dump all the water now, you guys. Yeah, you took the money. Now just shut the F up and go home and watch TV.
The water in the tanks, ladies and gentlemen.
Millions of tons, hundreds of tanks. Water is going to be dumped in the Pacific. And I'm probably pretty sure, you know, as soon as he made the announcement, they opened the taps. It's rainy season.
I would think you're right.
Push out the water.
Don't forget also that the normal amount of water that passes under the plant and goes into the ocean completely contaminated is
that's already
400 to 500 tons. Admittedly, it could be 1,000 tons a day. Nobody knows.
Much more than that. We're talking about thousands and thousands and thousands. A ton of water is not much. 1 cubic meter of water, that's nothing. It's coming out of there, but the price to be paid. When you take that kind of money, starting with Michael Flynn took the money, then Trump and the rest of the team, they all took the money from Japan. And we know Japanese government's broke. So the assumption is this is an investment. This is a tremendously good investment in the Trump administration. And frankly, he's been really disappointed on nuclear. So I make a comparison with Franklin D. Roosevelt to his supporters. Wake up. Look at all these liberals and leftists who were in awe of Roosevelt and turned a blind eye to his, towering crimes, provoking World War II. Had he gone in there and said, what happened to Amelia Earhart? I demand a response. Otherwise, American bombers will be flying over Tokyo. Maybe World War II never would have happened. Think about that.
You're 100% correct.
If he acted like a man instead of like a worm, as part of the slime, the swamp, the swamp creature, the Pacific War may not have happened. What happened to Earhart was a massive test of national character. She showed spunk. She didn't have to do that last mile, as I pointed out. But she knew Milley Island was the westernmost island. That's the one that's going to have telltale signs. If the Japanese really intend to invade the United States, from there, there's going to be an airstrip at Milley. And by God, she was right. She was forced to land on that airstrip.
Look at the top of Rents. Read the article by Yoshi and look at the photo presentation. Understand that, and I've got a picture of the atoll today. It's quite clear. You can see the dock. It may not be the exact same dock, but it's there in the picture, and that's where they were sitting when that photo was taken. It's right there. You'll pull up the story, open it up, scroll down, and the first thing you see is a contemporary photograph of the actual location where the most famous picture of all was taken. It's right there, and I don't know how you can look at that. Go ahead.
I said don't look at the photo. Read the photo. Look at the information it bears. It's actually an intelligence telegram. The genius of the best code is that it's not hidden. It's hidden in plain sight. It's
That's
right
how
in
they
front
do
of your
it.
Eyes.
Yeah.
What it's supposed to convey, but 99.99 people will not even notice that there is a message in there. And the plane is in there, the float plane with which they took to Kwajalein Island, is there.
That's the one on the right.
Union is there. The translator is there. It's all there. It's basically a report. Noonan.
Yeah.
And Noonan was the main suspect. You're the one the Japanese knew about him.
He was the intel. He was the intel asset that was running the spy op.
He was a not just a navigator, but the chief navigational instructor for Pan American Airlines.
Those
Pan
big
Am.
Clippers.
And
that
at
they
the time,
flew.
They had a China Clipper service. Mm-hmm. Japanese diplomats were flying on those planes. So Noonan, who's in charge of all the charts, all the information, working internationally, talking on the radio. They knew his voice. He was a known figure to the Japanese, operating in Shanghai, and Shanghai was a Japanese intelligence base.
He was not just some hack navigator that was picked up and put in the cockpit with her. He was a high-level operative, no question.
Yeah, he was put in the very last month before the flight, and he bumped their other co-pilot. He was bumped. And he was supposed to get off at Howland Island, their destination, after flying over the Japanese-controlled Marshalls. He was supposed to get off and board a second Navy cutter, and that would have had he would have taken with him all of the radio intercepts, all of the photographs, and all of the most important sketches, the navigational sketches, because he would have taken data on those airfields, with his compass and all that, which would have determined everything. You know, with to the Office of Naval Intelligence, and that that cutter would have then forwarded all that information by radio up to Pearl Harbor. You know, so
when you look at the picture of Jaluit, the atoll at the top of the photo page, and you see that dock there, that's history right there, and that's what you're looking at in that picture from the History Channel. Yeah. And I do want to echo what Yoshi says about. We should commend the History Channel for doing something that took a great deal of courage. And it obviously, from the person who hosted the program, former executive assistant at the FBI or something like that, this had to get some green lights from... There may be a conflict, I don't know, but somebody green-lighted this thing, or it wouldn't have been done.
Yeah.
It was interesting to see.
Well, it's been a long time, in that 70-year...
80 years.
Yeah, you know, hold. It's been 80 years, a 70-year hold on... unclassified documents expired 10 years ago. So, you know, it's high time this came out. So,
right. And
that's exactly what the History Channel should be doing. You know, they do some remarkable work sometimes compared to something like Nat Geo and those other, you know, perpetrators of propaganda.
Right.
You know, so I give them full credit for that. And then what you have added with your photo analysis has been just excellent. I was astonished because I noticed things in the photo, but I don't have, you know, I don't use Photoshop. I don't have the tools.
No, I don't either.
To really get into those things in micro, you know, precision detail that you and Jeff, what's his name?
James.
Neff over there.
Yeah.
Was James, yeah, Neff over there, were able to do. You know, the two of you really, put a, what do you call it? Like a Sherlock Holmes' magnifying glass on those photos. I was astonished at that little icon that Fred Noonan was holding. It's called a Kirin. Now, people have heard of Kirin beer, you know, the Japanese beer.
Yeah.
So just buy a can or go to the store and look at the Kirin on the label. That's what's on a smaller, like a childlike version of it, is on that banner that was used.
The little sign he's holding up is a Kirin symbol.
Yeah. Yeah, and just like the Kirin beer from Manchuria. So the image was given to him by one of the, there's thousands of Korean slave laborers sent to the marshals to build this. It was given by him, probably by a Korean prisoner, as sort of as a good luck charm. Because the Kirin represents an animal, it's a magical creature, basically a stag, okay, a deer. But it walks on the clouds, okay? It walks on the clouds. So obviously Noonan and... Earhart were pilots. They were cloud walkers. Okay.
There you go.
But also it was meant to give them sort of an immortality. It was a wish that they would not be harmed by the Japanese. And you see how friendly that translator is next to him. These are people part of the Christian resistance against Japan. You know, the Japanese were always paranoid that the Christians among the Marshallese would report back to the Australians. There were a lot of Australian missionaries there.
Oh,
and they
of course.
Were paranoid about these spy networks, and that's why they did that photo, and they backdated it, okay, in the National Diet Library. That photo was backdated to 1935. So they realized they had to maintain this deception around the potential spy networks among the Marshallese Islanders. And as you know, since the end of World War II, as part of the Marshals became independent, I believe the other part was a U.S. trusteeship, you know, the hostility toward the Japanese, you know, there's a friendship with the Japanese on one hand, but there's also hostility against the atrocities, the spy networks, the brutality toward prisoners and all that,
right.
You know, so the Japanese had a lot to fear. They were outnumbered, you know, by Koreans and Marshallese, and also there were many Japanese dissidents on this who were prisoners and were sent there to work. So they weren't under full control. And therefore, given that situation, Roosevelt had many, many, many opportunities to mount a rescue operation. You know,
many.
To break out Earhart and Noonan.
Absolutely.
It was inexcusable that something like that wasn't. Mm-hmm. Didn't have to be done by Americans. It could have been done by a third party. He could have done it, and he didn't do it. He wanted her to be done away with. And, you know, he is part... He takes probably, I would say, major responsibility for her death. The Japanese really didn't know what quantity she was, or even Noonan. They just couldn't figure it out, you know, except the fact that they were building these secret bases there.
Mm-hmm.
And but the people on the ground didn't realize Roosevelt suspected Japan was going to invade Latin America and the continental United States from the South Pacific Islands. You know, the people on the ground there didn't have any idea. Their intelligence headquarters. In fact, this photo was sent to Palau, which mm-hmm. is toward New Guinea. It's in Melanesia. And this was the intelligence headquarters for spying on the Australians in New Guinea. But more importantly, on the Dutch in Indonesia, in Dutch East Indies, because the Japanese target was to grab the oil fields in Sumatra. You know, the United States and the Netherlands were starting to graduate. And you got to remember, Roosevelt was Dutch, yeah? He's a Dutch, you know, Standard Oil, Royal Dutch Shell. They're like sister companies. So the Dutch were sort of ratcheting up pressure on Japan at the time. So the Japanese were preparing all these bases to take the oil fields of Indonesia.
You know, you mentioned Palau. That's where Truk Lagoon is, right?
Yeah,
and it's in that that chain of islands, and that was one of the enormous. They call that the something Turkey Shoot. The Americans had the Japanese overwhelmed, and there were so many ships in that harbor at Truk Lagoon.
Yeah.
They sank them all. It was grim. Now,
The movie Hacksaw Ridge. Everyone should see it. To get an idea of what kind of war it was in the Pacific. It was incredible slaughter on both sides, and all of it preventable. All of it preventable. You know, the Earhart incident, I think, was crucial to the direction that World War II would take toward Pearl Harbor, and not from Peru up to the United States, and even crucial for the war, because had Roosevelt mounted a rescue mission and rescued her and used that to confront Japan, I don't think Pearl Harbor would have happened. You know, the Japanese would have been buffaloed by that. They would have said, we've been caught. They know everything, right?
Oh, I completely agree with you.
You know, there's a lot of historians said Roosevelt knew exactly what the Japanese were up to. Open the gates, encourage them to come in, right?
Sure.
Absolutely. I mean, our historians, even people like John Dower, I mean, these are like massive mainstream American historians who said, you know, Roosevelt was largely responsible for not using his intelligence to stop the war, but rather wanted the Japanese to attack. But he wanted to choose the direction. He wanted the war to happen, but he was going to make sure he was going to win that war despite the huge sacrifices of life on both sides. You know, it's the most deadly war in American history.
I think the Iraq War, when you add up the number of Iraq War veterans who have died since the war, is right up there near the top, too. Hold on just a minute. We'll be right back. Yoshi and I will continue. You're invited to the top of Rents.com. Take a look. And here's a stat for you, Yoshi, as we go to the break. America has been at war 222 out of the 239 years it has been a country. 222 out of 239, America has been at war. That's a lot of war. Back in a minute. Back with Yoshi, and do read his brilliant essay at the top. It wraps up the whole story. So they were held captive for apparently over 3.5 years. We also have some reports that they were both beheaded, not shot, and buried in shallow graves on Saipan. Others suggest that they were taken and their remains were seeded on another island to throw searchers off. We don't know. We don't know what happened. What did you hear about that? What was the final disposition of their bodies? Do we know if they were buried on Saipan?
Well, I think they were shot because, you know, that would be the normal way of killing a spy. I think Richard Sword was shot, you know, so that's just the standard procedure. So a lot of ammunition for the Japanese, but I think that's just their procedure. You know, beheading and all is an honorable death. Or it would be just for, if they're totally out of ammunition, as they were in Nanjing, in the Nanjing executions there. You know, they killed 80,000 Chinese soldiers who had dropped their uniforms and and were considered spies, and they kill them with swords. So I think the seeding went on. The broken parts from the plane, some of them were dumped. But the plane itself is mainly intact. So that is, I think, the bigger mystery is what did Roosevelt do with the Lockheed Electra? He had it repaired. It was put back together. The parts were flown in. And so Lockheed would have an accounting of those spare parts, the Lockheed company. They were flown there, and the plane went, and it had to be Lockheed service people, too, at least one engineer that went out there to put it back together and make it fly. But what did they do? That Earhart's plane is somewhere hidden by the U.S. government. I don't think they just crashed it. I think that is just
there's plenty
of war planes. There are plenty of planes that were shot down over the Pacific, you know, so... I think he kept it as a memorabilia, sort of like a sick memorabilia of some sort. Or maybe Lockheed has it to see, to do their analysis. You know, the plane would have been very, very valuable to them for technical reasons of analyzing how Electra and their future design, you know, the design improvement of a very advanced model plane.
How do we know, Yoshi, that the plane was, in fact, on Saipan at an airfield or
Well, I think
facility.
A lot of GI saw it. You know, in Tokyo, there was one U.S. Navy guy, not a guy with a gun, you know, but an engineer or something. He saw it. But it was well known. The Lockheed Electra there was mysterious to everybody because they did know it was the same model as Earhart's. Other than that, they did not know it was Earhart's because she was supposed to have crashed somewhere else. So they were all wondering what this thing was, and it disappeared. Perhaps Lockheed Company sent a plane there. I don't know. Maybe it was, but it was apparently sitting on the airfield. They found it when the Japanese surrendered, and it remained there for months. You know, and so it was obviously Earhart's plane. It wasn't just flown in by Lockheed as part of an investigation. It was sitting there too long. Okay, so you know, there's still a lot of mysteries that need to be uncovered. And Lockheed Corporation, you know, crooks that they are, should do something about it. And maybe it's especially former aviation engineers or people who worked on repair crews should come up with divulge some information. This story is going to stay alive for a long while.
So,
there are records.
Yeah.
You know, there are
people alive now that know. Look, the granddaughter of the guy who took that photograph now, the famous photograph, is the governor of the Marshall Islands. And
this is the Northern Marshalls, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, the U.S. part, okay.
Yeah.
And she said her father was executed?
Her grandfather. I think it was her grandfather.
Her grandfather was executed as a spy by the Japanese?
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is what I mean. They cleaned out... They tried to wipe out anyone who directly knew about Earhart as American forces were advancing. They obviously murdered the Marshallese, as many as they could. And so the testimonies we have are people like, you know, a girl on a bicycle who happens to go by. I think she spotted the Electra, I believe. No, she spotted Earhart, I think, exercising out in the prison yard, you know. So there are a lot of incidental Marshallese accounts, okay? There were just too many people who were witness to their capture. But the main participant, the man in the know, the photographer, and it's not clear whether he was Japanese or Marshallese, because there was a lot of intermarriages on those islands.
Uh-huh.
So my suspicion from the photo was that he was Japanese, okay, because it's a very kind of Japanese-type composition that he took. It's very end. There was a lot of work probably inside the dark room, too. So I suspect she's partially Japanese by, you know, patrimony or whatever. So,
right.
And there's, again, more and more, there's plenty of mysteries left, you know. And this whole group that's been searching for the plane, I think they've been off the wall. They're looking at all this little technical information instead of doing the oral histories. And then, I mean, you have to take a much broader approach as we've tried to do here, you know?
Yes,
we
exactly.
try to look at all factors.
That's right.
All factors, and also the operational procedures of Japanese naval intelligence, or Japanese intelligence at the time, and American naval intelligence. You know, it was an intelligence war at that time that was going on. It was not a declared war, but an intelligence war. And both sides fought it pretty methodically and ruthlessly.
There are
the
records.
Japanese were only surprised. What the Japanese kept, I think, digging at with Noonan is they could not believe how would you send a new did Lockheed Electra, one of the most advanced aircraft in the world, just out over this remote part of the Pacific and not have a backup team, not have a full rescue operation? You know, this is what the Japanese were just sort of, you know, pounding Newton about. Who is working with you? Who are your guys in Lae, New Guinea? New Guinea was especially important because they were planning to assault Indonesia, right?
Uh-huh.
And New Guinea is part of the flanking action. Half the island belonged to the Dutch. So this is, and Newton had no idea what the hell they were driving at. You see what I'm pointing?
I do. This is very interesting.
No one would ever suspect that the great Roosevelt, you know, who a self-proclaimed genius, former assistant secretary of the Navy in World War I,
mm-hmm.
who plans such a shoddy, amateurish operation, it would be inconceivable to any other intelligence agency of any great power in the planet, except maybe the British. The British have a long experience with Americans and know how the Americans can, you know, mess up. So
he sure exposed his cowardice, and that's the word you used, and it is absolutely spot on.
He backed out.
People know about this. Yoshi, there are files somewhere about, we know exactly what happened. Somebody somewhere knows. We had spies, they had spies. It's not a mystery. If you're on the inside someday,
it's Office of Naval Intelligence would have.
ONI knows, of course.
There was no CIA then. It's Office of Naval Intelligence that would have that information. I hope some Navy intelligence officers come forward with this stuff. It's a patriotic duty to come forward.
If anyone wants to contact Yoshi or myself about this, and I know in this day and age there's really no anonymity, but if you want to mail a letter, whatever, we'd like to know. We'd like to know, and we'll protect you. You're a source, so don't worry about it. But don't take this stuff to the grave with you. Go ahead.
A couple other points, Jeff, here is how the Japanese government, you know, their propaganda, their foreign ministry, is able to manipulate the American press. You know, they wine and dine the Tokyo bureau's chiefs of the New York Times, Washington Post, give them all kinds of perks, free trips, you know, factory visits, all kinds of stuff, you know, year-end gifts, you know, the New Year's gifts, you know, the New York Times publisher, the Schultzbergers, come over, and all the Japanese corporations line up and the Japanese government institutes to give money to the New York Times for ads, so supposedly for ads and things like that, you know, buried in some back page, but, you know, and just a nominal something would be run to justify collecting all that lucre from the Japanese. You know, this has been going on. It continues to go on. It's despicable of the American free press to allow themselves to be bought. It was despicable of General Michael Flynn, like all the other generals posted in Japan, filling their pockets with yen, ill-gotten yen, okay, going over to Tokyo and being wined and dined, giving girls or boys whatever they want. It is disgusting, okay? And this is what led to World War II. This, you know, the sinfulness of the American side being willing to be bribed in Tokyo, and so to a point where Tokyo says, we got the Americans under control. We're walking all over them. Now let's go take America.
The debauchery was so glaring in the 30s, and the Japanese, they just feasted on it. They just used it.
Yeah. There were plenty of, in the Japanese communities, these little restaurants where all the mayors and, you know, defense officials would go there, eat Japanese food, and go back room with one of the girls, okay? You know, all gratis, you know, all for free, run by the Japanese intelligence service. There was a whole network, okay? And, you know, as Japanese American, there's a lot of other Japanese Americans who just cringe at this stuff. They said, we never betrayed America. Yeah, well, there were girls in the back room who were born in America. So I'm just saying, let's be realists here, folks. I don't support the relocation, the internment. But on the other hand, there were legitimate fears that, you know, of all this hanky-panky going on, okay, that American official dump, and the FBI did what it could at limited resource. They knew some things were going down in Latin America, especially in Peru and Brazil, you know, of preparing to invade, you know, the United States. This is no joke. So Roosevelt was paranoid. But he made that classic mistake of intelligence, wanting to see, his curiosity got the hold of him, right? To see what's the next thing they're going to do. Where is it leading to? And by the time the arrest came down, it was too late. The war had already begun, right?
Right, exactly.
Had he arrested these people, before the war, the Japanese would have been deterred. But he let it go on so long until after Pearl Harbor. So this was a classic. You know, Roosevelt comes up as one of the smartest presidents in American history. I think he really goofed it up. You know, he's one of the ones responsible for the war, for leading the Japanese on into thinking this was going to be a pushover. America is, and that was the attitude in Japan. America won't last 30 days. You know, they talk.
That's
big,
very interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah.
No respect.
It's well known.
None.
It's talked about by even American occupation guys I met when I was younger. That was the Japanese attitude, you know, at the time, you know, tremendous overconfidence that America would cave in. Japan could occupy America for a while, and then you will get a Quisling group in, finally, and America will be very much what it is today, a partner of TEPCO and a partner of Toyota, okay? So the Japanese have won. You know, the Japanese fundamental attitude was right. It was just their tactics. They didn't have to use guns. They just used money. And America fell, and just like Trump fell, right? Trump fell.
Sure did.
You know, like a overripe peach. It went splat on
splat.
The ground, right?
That's the word,
yeah,
splat.
He's in the pocket. Flynn was the bag man.
Yeah.
Trump is completely in the pocket of the Japanese and the Israelis and whoever else.
Abe must laugh. They must laugh.
Yeah, well, that's why Abe, you know, when you ran that title on Amelia Earhart, he unleashed his dogs on you, you know, the dogs of denial. Remember, you ran that Abe should apologize?
Yep.
I mean, that got to the foreign ministry right away, and they unleashed these, you know, these someone at Newsweek, one of the minders at Newsweek, Japanese minders, and the Japanese military buff, otaku, a buff, who came up with these outrageous, you know, little bits of disinformation.
Oh, please.
The Koshu boat was far away. We knew it was far away. It took 6 months to get them off that little island and over, you know, or at least, let's say, 5 months to get them off that little island.
Right.
No, they wanted Japanese authorities wanted to like, stay there where you are in case we need to call in the Americans to get you out of there, right? So the Japanese disinfo service is alive and well, just like it was back then in the 1930s, 80 years ago. The same games are going on. The Americans are still the same suckers.
I agree. When you look at the pictures, by the way, in the picture story, understand that Amelia's sitting on the dock, and she's looking out at her plane on the bow of that ship. And it's a small freighter. We used to call them tramp steamers. There's another one.
Yeah, they're a tramp steamer. It's a tramp steamer is what it is.
The Koshu Maru is the other one pulling the float plane on the barge. When you look at the Lockheed Electra on the front of the other boat, which is unidentified so far, although I think the History Channel, once they see what we've done, will be able to identify
it. World War I. I think it's a German freighter from
the
war.
It looks Germanish to me.
I think it was one of the ones captured when, you know, that whole area, much of the Pacific there was all a German colony. You know?
That's right.
And so the Japanese took it. Japanese were in the Anglo-Japanese alliance and allied with the London Naval Treaty with the U.S.
Yeah.
So they joined the Western side, you know, the Allied side of that war. So that, to me, looks very, very much like a German vessel, an old steamship vessel, you know. And the Germans ran a lot of tramp steamers like that, you know. The engines would go on. You know, the German-built engines would go on forever, you know.
Yeah.
You know, until the ship was finally holed or something, ran on a reef. These things would last forever,
Other ship, if you've noticed, both of them have booms or cranes, or the booms is what they are, for lifting heavy things.
For salvage operations.
Yeah, the other ship would have...
These float planes, they had to often transfer, what do you call it, float planes, flying boats, what do you call those things?
Seaplanes.
Seaplanes. Nowadays, seaplanes. Yeah, you had to transfer them, so they're perfect for moving aircraft around. And there were some pretty big seaplanes in those days. That was a glorious era of seaplane technology.
Oh, those Pan Am Clippers.
The Japanese had all kinds of wonderful ones.
Yeah, the Pan Am Clipper for us.
And the French, too, over in Tahiti and all, they used a lot of wonderful seaplanes. As you joke with me once online about the planes, these things, Fantasy Island, right? Yeah.
Yeah, well,
so
the other ship...
That was a wonderful era of technology.
If you look at the other ship, they probably worked together. The other ship used its booms in the back to hoist the Lockheed up on the bow of the other one.
Exactly.
And they tied it down. It's sitting up there right in the front, and she's looking at that. And can you imagine how she must have felt?
Oh, my God. She was on the last leg of that journey. The rest have been right up
and there's
to
her plane
Hawaii
out there
and then
boat.
Across. And she's done that Hawaii, you know, right up to Hawaii. You know, that would have been it, right?
Yep.
That would have been it. You know, and then land in the United States.
She could have run for president.
Welcome.
She could have run for president.
She would have been the first American president. She was, you know, she was adored, you know, and adored. And I'm very happy to have gone to her alma mater, to Purdue University, which a lot of people put down, the Boilermakers and all in the middle of nowhere, but, you know, to have the most illustrious graduate in the world, which is Amelia
Earhart.
Well,
that's really nice that you're proud of that. I feel,
you know, it's a hellhole. Otherwise, it's a hellhole out there, practically dry county and all, you know, Indiana. And I hope Mike Pence, you know, does something while he's vice president, and if he becomes president, to honor Amelia Earhart and to get behind this History Channel.
The biggest honor they could extend to her
investigation
is the biggest honor they could extend, Yoshi, is to open their files. Here's what we know.
I really encourage Vice President Pence, being a Hoosier, from a resident state of Indiana. You know, Indianapolis is very close to Purdue, you know, and I think Purdue's actually got campuses down there in Indianapolis, to take this upon himself personally, Mike Pence and his wife, to vindicate Amelia Earhart. I hope this happens. It should happen so that the centennial of her downing will be a tremendous national event.
It should be
holiday.
A national holiday. Absolutely.
Yeah, it should be a national holiday on that centennial. She should be honored like no other American has ever been honored in the past, especially a woman, you know, not a Hillary Clinton, but a great woman.
Well,
not
I think
scoundrel,
you're right.
But a great woman.
Without question. It's inarguable the woman
the
was.
The other point I raised in my article at the end, I left it toward the end for those, that this whole idea of the South Pacific, the German era there, the Japanese takeover is massively significant because in 1908, the German artillery instructor in Tokyo, Karl Haushofer, he predicted that the Japanese would try to take the German colonies in the Pacific and Asia, okay? And he based a thing called this is for population reasons. He said the Japanese population is booming. They have to find Lebensraum, you know, room to live for their growing population.
Yep.
He's the creator of Lebensraum theory. He was Hitler's top advisor for the Anschluss, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And also, he was an esoteric Buddhist. Every fan of the occult should know the name Karl Haushofer. He belonged to an esoteric Buddhist group in Japan, you know, connected to an original temple in China, which had long ago been down, very close to Tibetan Buddhism. You know, there's actually three esoteric schools. There's the Tibetan schools.
Uh-huh.
There's a Shingon, which he belonged to, a branch of. And then you have Shaolin, you know, the Kung Fu school. Those are the three esoteric schools of Buddhism. So this is like an incredible moment in history when the Japanese took over those islands. It's not very well understood. I don't think most of men, 99.9% of Americans, never even heard of this stuff. They have no idea how the Japanese got down there.
Mm-hmm.
And then this is, of course, linked to the assault on Pearl Harbor and the struggle, you know, for the London, within the Washington Naval Treaty, Japan wanted parity.
Right.
And that was the reason the Navy had such a grudge. It was the reason Hitler sent his German officers to Nanjing and were participants in the Battle of Nanjing, the so-called Rape of Nanjing. That occurred on the German side, you know, that massive historical events all hinged upon Karl Haushofer, who's virtually an unknown character, except in people in circles that study modern occultism. Other than that, he's virtually unknown. And this massively shaped history. And that part of the world, you just think of Fantasy Island, you know, beach resorts, Tahiti, you know, Club Med, things like that. It has all these stereotypical images. You know, you don't realize how important it has been in shaping right. modern history of the 20th century and right. of our century today, the result.
It is said that the murdered Secretary of Defense, our first Secretary of Defense, James Forrestal, who was murdered. And yeah. if you don't know the story, look, just do a search, James Forrestal, was said to be a part of FDR's cover-up of Amelia Earhart and Fred Noonan. That was in a book that came out several years
wow.
ago.
Wow.
I'll send you the link to that.
Yeah, I didn't realize that would make sense.
This.
It would be part of a whole
sure.
naval intelligence operation in the Pacific, and Forrestal may have been a critic of Roosevelt in his times, like I am now.
Okay.
Why didn't Roosevelt take any kind of action to stop the Japanese advance, you know, to confront Japan and show them the intelligence and say, you're not going to do this. So, and then I remember they claimed Forrestal had gone insane or something like that, right? Which he was not at all insane, right? They put him under
right.
drugs. They did all good. Put him in a straitjacket.
Yep.
Probably
here.
Maybe electro, you know, what do you call it? Electrodes on his forehead and all that, you know, electroshock.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this would be, if that was the case, that the Earhart case was one of the triggers for Roosevelt to take out Forrestal, then we have to completely revise the reputation of Roosevelt, not as a man who won World War II, but the man who created World War II. Okay, who brought America into the war, the Pacific War, and then the larger war, as one of the greatest war criminals in human history. If that's the case, and again, I hope the History Channel, historians, I hope people in the U.S. government, the FBI, don't flinch at that thought that one of the American presidents may have acted in such a conniving way, whether by hook or by crook, that he brought upon this disaster. Sure, America took over the world, but what kind of world did America take over?
Yeah.
And what has America become since World War II? You know, one of them, not the great democracy, you know, not the great anti-interventionist, not the America of the Monroe Doctrine, not the America of Washington, but just another imperialist power that America has opposed since its birth in 1776.
Indeed.
So
indeed.
it would just be incredible if this whole reversal of Roosevelt as the greatest modern president were to actually prove true that he wasn't. He was the most greatest villain in American history. That would be astonishing. I'm not saying it now because unless we have all the historical facts, but the Forrestal murder, if that is the case, boy, are we onto something huge here?
Yeah.
The history of America and for its future and how we judge our president. I think the most important thing is how do we judge American presidents? Okay. And I've already said Trump has got, I really supported him. I thought he had hope to bring America back to its roots,
right.
Before the FDR era, you know, of America that was a better place, you know, a heroic country.
Yeah.
To say I'm not disappointed, and I hope he doesn't follow in the footsteps of FDR, okay?
Of
being just a demagogue, a liar, a backstabber. I hope he doesn't move in that direction. I hope he comes back and comes to his senses.
I hope
Trump comes to his senses. I don't know what's the matter with him, but
well,
he has gone off
something's,
the deep end.
Something is
sure.
really wrong. Last hour I pointed out that one of his major campaign pledges was that any couple making $50,000 a year or less would be no longer required to pay any income tax. They would be taken off the tax rolls, $50,000 a year or less. That never went anywhere. It was never mentioned again, but I got him on video.
Yeah,
I've got the text of it. He made that promise.
Yeah.
So what happened?
All the promises seem to have been scuttled. I mean, at least he did hold to wiping out this climate change nonsense. I give him that much credit.
That and the TPP.
So I'm not entirely yet lost hope in the man, but I hope he comes back to the Donald Trump we saw in the campaign.
Right.
Not this monstrous, you know, brain dead, whatever, tyrant we've seen since. He's totally confused, doesn't know what he's doing.
He
seems to be under some sort of mind control.
Exactly.
This is terrible.
You got it. You just said it.
This is terrible.
Yeah.
And I think the Roosevelt story has a lot of bearing as a warning, not only to Donald Trump, but the future presidents. We demand an American president that acts on American principle.
Well,
Amelia Earhart sacrificed her life for.
That's right.
She didn't have to fly over Amelia. She could have ducked down to the British Islands and ran, but she felt she had to get the final smoking gun evidence. Okay.
She was a patriot.
As a result, she suffered terribly.
Yeah,
she suffered terribly, and she did the right thing to try to stop this war, to stop the Japanese aggression. She did the right thing, and that was also for the. It's not about nationalism, because that was the right thing for the Japanese people.
That needs to be into that suicidal war.
Okay.
Right. That needs to be brought out.
She was a hero for the world, for both America and Japan, the Pacific Islands, for Europe, for the world. And her life was sacrificed, I say, not in vain, not in vain. We should honor her with further investigation. The best thing we can do to honor her memory is to keep digging for the truth and to vindicate her against the Roosevelts.
Very well said. Thank you, Yoshi. Thanks for writing that, and thanks for everything. I think we've covered a lot this hour.
Well, thank you for Jeff. When the History Channel was being assaulted by this dastardly, Shinzo Abe's dastardly attempt at denial, I'm really glad you and your team stepped forward to do the photo analysis and show that this disputed photo, in fact, was undeniably of Earhart, Noonan, and the Electra. I really, and that bailed out the History Channel too. And I think this was a remarkable moment when Rents.com did what it's there to do, which is to defend the truth, whatever the personal price or the cost.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And let's hope that the History Channel steps forward and carries this to a logical conclusion. Yeah. There's much more ahead. Thank you, my friend. We'll talk soon.
All right.
Okay. Yoichi Shimatsu, and do read his brilliant article at the top of Rents.com, and we'll be right back.